Hey, St. Louis, Eddie McVay here from Bomber O'Brien's, inviting you to watch college football Saturdays and NFL Sundays at Bomber's. Flat screens are throughout the bar, as well as Golden Tee, Buck Hunter, Silver Strike, and dart boards. If you're hungry and thirsty, we have burgers, wings, pizza, salads, as well as great drink specials. So, come see us at Bomber O'Brien's. If you find a fat owner at the end of the bar, he will probably buy you a drink. Bomber O'Brien's at the corner of South Kings Highway and Beck, one block north of Chippewa.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
You ever watch this video, Doug?
Yeah, sure. It's a big video.
1981?
Yep. That's Dodgers when MTV was in its heyday, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was a bunch of heavy guys.
Yeah.
They were going and doing a treadmill.
But then right at the end,
a couple of twinks held hands and walked into a locker room. And I wonder how that played in 1981.
Oh, very controversial indeed.
Was it really?
I don't think so. No.
I was conceived of this song.
I didn't know that.
I was born in 82. My parents heard this song and they said,
"Let's make Charlie."
My dad looked at Bridget and said, "Let's get physical."
Good for you, Charlie. I didn't
Isn't that kind of a creepy feeling to think with your parents like that?
Yeah, it is. It actually is.
Mm-hmm.
I was born May 28th, Doug, so that would have been what? Would it have been September, October of 81?
Well, back it up 3 months.
September, I think.
March.
September of 81.
Try not to talk over this guitar riff.
You were nothing before that, Charlie.
Forget it. Talk over the guitar riff. This is a sick guitar riff, sir.
It's okay. Sick.
Don't say riff.
Potlod likes it. He's DJing for us. Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah. She's quite a dish.
She's still fine, man.
Yeah.
She's still fine.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Ryan Kelly Morning After. It airs on the all-new 590 The Fan KFNS. My name is Timothy Michael McKernan, number one in the power rankings. Kind of excited about it. A lot of people thought when I would turn 40, I would start to drop, and I don't know if that'll happen. I'm still real high on myself, though. I will tell you that.
Yeah, we've noticed that much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Self-esteem, no problem with that.
No. Larry Nichols on the appliances counter phone lines. I don't know why. But Jared from the Wheelhouse is also on the appliances counter phone lines. And I deep teased a story on the ruling against the Rammies and for St. Louis area fan plaintiffs. And we will get into that in a matter of moments. But first, it's time for our Wheelhouse Picks of the Week.
These are the Wheelhouse Downtown Picks of the Week.
I got the best player in the league. I'm looking pretty sweet. Head of the football.
Wheelhouse is the local college football and NFL headquarters in St. Louis. 32-ounce big beers with 30 flavors to choose from and a large from-scratch menu. The best nachos in town, served by an even greater staff. They're easily accessible. Take the 11th Street exit off Highway 40. Contact us and book your watch party at parties@wheelhousestl.com. Now, here are your picks of the week.
Well, Doug, it's unbelievable. It's time for Picks of the Week. We're doing it today on Thursday because we have our live show at Hot Shots in St. Charles tonight, and all of our audience is welcome to come out because you're going to be there. Charlie's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Iggy's going to be there. The Plowhawk's going to be there. The Sea Monster's going to be there. Jay Randolph Jr. is going to be there for Foot Fetish Friday. Chris Denman of We Are Live. Travis Terrell of We Are Live. Hannah Ray Yates of We Are Live. Michael Gaines of We Are Live. Timberfake, Tony Lee, Mike Lee, and maybe even Beavis.
Beavis.
Hot Shot St.
Beavis,
Charlton.
A DirecTV salesman?
Allegedly. I think it might be Dish, and I don't want to get in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know they would be proud of that.
Yeah, competitors.
Seamaster, do you have our records from last week? I don't put you on the spot here. I know I went, if you include the Rammies game, I went 5-3. I know Jared went 5-2, and I don't remember what he picked on the Rammies and Sea Pigeons. But Charlie and I both picked the Rammies, not because we thought they should, but because we thought the NFL would make sure that they would cover, if not win.
You're both saying it's now fixed.
Well,
I have
Brian
to say,
Toohey
though,
at 8:30.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. the Rams the last like 4 or 5 years, they always lose to the teams that they're supposed to beat, and they always beat the teams like the Seahawks. Don't they own the Seahawks the last
three, four years?
I swear, they always beat the Seahawks.
Yeah.
They can't beat anybody else.
Doug called North Dakota State over Iowa, and they were getting 14 points. He said, I don't even care about them points.
Don't sleep on the Bison.
And you were right. Yeah. Charlie, what was your luck last week?
It was the under on the Rams and the Seahawks.
Oh, you shipped that. You didn't even sweat that. You didn't sweat it before kickoff.
I bet $50,000 on it.
Did you really?
And I had the Browns plus 6.5 against the Dolphins. Or no, the Ravens? Well, either way, the Browns. And they covered, even though they were up 20-2 and still lost. Seamaster, do you have those numbers? If you don't, it's fine. I didn't ask for them. I'm putting you on the spot. It's not fair.
Tim and I tied for first. Doug was last.
Yep. Well, Jared actually shipped it.
Jared was also tied for first.
Jared from the Wheelhouse joins us right now. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
Congratulations on week one. You upped the ante for this competition by going 5-2. Did you take the Rams or the Seahawks?
Unfortunately, I took the Seahawks, so I lost that one.
Okay. All right. Well, still, it was a very good week, so we were all 5-3. This week, Missouri is not on the board against Delaware State, Doug, so I will not be able to bet that in Las Vegas.
Nice scheduling, Mizzou.
This week.
Very nice.
It's
the matchup we all wanted to see. Mizzou-Delaware State. Don't get me started.
Producer Joe said, I really wanted to include the Georgia game this week, but I figured I would catch hell for finding a way to include them. He does always include Georgia's if we're doing the show out of Atlanta. So instead, he went with Florida and Tennessee. Doug, the Vols have had trouble with Florida for, what, a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And now they got a chance, a 6.5-point favorite. They should have won last year in Gainesville. They blew it. Will they get it right this year in Knoxville?
No, sir, I'm going to say Tennessee. I think when you grew up in the Smoky Mountains, running moonshine, put your hands in the dirt, pinning your ears back, I think Tennessee will handle Florida at home.
Tennessee.
6.5. You lay in the 6.5.
Tennessee, right. One of these teams that you just don't know what to expect. I think they're going to be up for this game. I like Tennessee getting, touchdown and a half? Or should I say 6.5?
6.5.
6.5. I'll take the Vols.
Jared, where are you on this one?
Oh, I'm going against the grain here. I'm going to. I like the Gators and the points. I think it'll stay close. So I'm going to take the Gators in the 6.5.
Producer Joe also went with Florida. I'm going to lay the 6.5 as well. Intuition tells you otherwise, though, based on Tennessee's problems with Appalachian State, Ohio. But here they are, 6.5-point favorites to try and end the skid against the Gators. And if Missouri would have won last week, a game many of us would be paying attention to for the SECs, but instead now we'll just be watching Delaware State. Wisconsin's at Michigan State. Sparty's -5.5, Doug.
I'm going to go for whiskey. I think this game will come down to two words, pocket awareness.
Nice.
So based on pocket awareness, I think Wisconsin will win this one, or at least cover.
First of all, I'd like to change my previous pick. I wasn't paying attention. I actually want Florida.
I don't know if Seamonster will.
Seamonster, can we do that? I know this is important. There's a lot of money on the line. I wasn't really listening. I was looking on Facebook. So I will take Florida. Wisconsin and Michigan State. I'll tell you what, Michigan State impressed me going and getting that win against Notre Dame. I think I'm going to take the Spartans. I think Wisconsin had the big win over LSU, but I'm not buying the Badgers overall. Michigan State, Mark D'Antonio at home. One of the better programs in the country, underrated. I'll take Sparty.
He loves the upsets, although he does slip up sometimes at home against teams he should beat. Take a look at Nebraska. Producer Joe with Michigan State. Jared, who are you going with?
I'm going with Michigan State also to cover by 5.5.
I got Wisconsin plus 5.5, and that's because of pocket awareness?
Yeah. That'll be the key to that one.
And who's their quarterback?
Oh, I think we know who the quarterback is. He's been under center all year.
Jeff Smoker, the Rams left him as a safety. Yep. Arkansas, Texas A&M, -6.5. Doug, you've been saying wow, wow, wow.
That's what I did say. I don't think Arkansas will be able to stop the A&M cross buck. So I'm going to go for the Aggies in that one.
What does that mean?
It's a running play, the old cross buck.
Well, I'll tell you what.
I think Red Grange used to run up and down the field on the cross buck. Hello, you know anything at all about this game?
Yeah, I haven't watched either of these teams. I know nothing about their personnel, but I feel like Brett Bielema teams, they always run the ball, and they got some defense, and you know what I say, Doug? I say defense travels, and because of that, I'm going to take the Hogs.
Jared, who do you have? Because I know producer Joe went with the Aggies.
I'm going against the 12th man here in College Station. I'm going to take Arkansas on the points.
A&M has looked pretty good, surprisingly so, early on in the season, whereas Arkansas has kind of scuffed against some subpar competition. I am going to go with Texas A&M minus 6.5. Let's turn our attention to Sunday now. And, Doug, I'm turning our attention to Tampa, okay, where the Rammies and that offense go up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and that cover two of Lovie Smith and John Gruden.
Right. Wow.
The Tampa two.
Buccaneers laying 5.5 against the Fighting Rammy.
The Rams only beat the Seahawks because Russell Wilson was hurt. But my people in Tampa tell me that Vinny Testaverde is healthy and ready to go. And I think he will light up the scoreboard against the Rams. I'm going the Bucs and Testaverde.
This is one of those weeks where, and I'm actually surprised they haven't announced the Jeff Fisher extension yet right after the big win. You'd think that would have happened yesterday. But again, Rams have the big win. You think they're going to roll it together and get something going. They never do. They're not very good. I will pick against the Rams probably the rest of the year, including this game.
Jared, who do you have?
Well, I picked against the Rams last week, but I overcome the cross-country flight and the time zone difference. And Jameis Winston has been a little prone to some turnovers so far this year. So I think the Rams are going to...
Nurse? Nancy? Oh, we're having phone issues with you, Jared. Heads up. Producer Joe went with the Buccaneers. I'm going with the Buccaneers as well. Jared went with the Rams, plus 5.5. We got here. We got Vikings and Panthers. Sammy Bradford. Sammy the gunslinger, Doug. He's getting 7 against Cammy Nunu in Charlotte.
I don't think Bradford is the key. I think the key for the Vikings is their pass rush with Carl Eller and Alan Page. Those are two, they remain two of the best darn pass rushers these eyes have ever seen. I'm going to say the Vikings go into Charlotte and stun the Panthers.
Wow.
Speaking of pass rush, you have the Vikings. You have a really mobile quarterback in Sam Bradford.
Right.
No injury issues. He has a healthy knee.
Mm-hmm.
Never had any type of procedures on that.
No.
And you have a solid running game with Adrian Peterson, correct?
That's correct. All of this is correct.
Correct.
Probably
he's
out
not,
for the year.
He's not injured. Okay. Because of that, I think Sam Bradford's probably going to be sacked 14 times in this game, and I think the Panthers are going to destroy the Vikings.
Jared, where are you, sir?
I agree with that. I think Adrian Peterson's been having a slow year. They've been struggling rushing the ball anyway. Now that he's out for the year, most likely, I think they're going to really struggle this weekend. Sam Bradford will likely end up hurt. And I'm taking the Panthers minus 7. I think they're going to run away with this one.
But wouldn't it be fun to see Sean Hill and Matt Asiata in the backfield up against the NFC champions? But I'm going Panthers minus 7. Producer Joe did as well. So minus Doug, we are all on the Panthers. Doug, though, believes in Sammy the Gunslinger. And you really are a believer in Alan Page and Carl Eller.
Yeah, have you seen him play lately?
I think one of them's dead.
Holy smoke. Gary Sutherland's in there? Holy smokes.
Steelers minus 3.5 at Philadelphia. A little battle of Pennsylvania, and it's great. Steelers minus 3.5.
I will go for the Steelers, not so much based on their explosive offense, but based on their edge rushing and zone blitzes. So I'll take the Steelers in that one.
Interesting. I look at this game, and I don't have a pulse of it, Doug. Carson
Wentz. You don't
study
the game like I do.
I don't study the game like you. Carson Wentz, 2-0, has looked really good, but I believe those wins were against, what, the Browns and the Bears? Not exactly.
You are correct, sir.
Not exactly great team. So I think in his first real test, will he be able to basically score with Big Ben? Because I think they're going to put at least 30 on the board. I'm going to take the Steelers on the road.
Jared, where are you, sir?
I picked against Big Ben last week. Big mistake. That was one of my losses. I think that Wentz is going to run into a pretty tough opponent in the Steelers' defense, and I'm taking Big Ben and the Steelers, and they're going to cover the 3.5.
I'm laying 3.5 as well. So is producer Joe. We are all in agreement on that one on the InsideSTL.com picks. And our locks of the week, Doug, you gave us North Dakota State last week.
Yeah.
People are anxious to hear what you have for this week.
Well, I'm going to go down south and say that Ole Miss will cover and beat Georgia. I don't think Georgia's very good.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And with Ole Miss,
I was thinking about making that my lock. They're laying 7 for the
record. Yeah, I'm going Ole Miss based on the recent play of Tucker Fredrickson. Ole Miss, the
Isn't that the guy who wears the bow tie and
running back? No,
Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Fredrickson from Ole Miss,
probably related.
Well, I'm waiting for my ESPN website to buffer so I can so I can get a game.
Oh, so you don't have one necessarily.
Well, I like to kind of pick it on the fly. It worked last time. And so why don't you go ahead as my page
refreshes. When you say you like to pick it on the fly, it means you haven't thought about it until right now.
Sometimes your first instinct is your best, though.
I agree with that. Jared, what are you going with?
I'm going some unconventional lock here. Maybe I don't understand the concept of the lock of the week, but I got the make some excitement around the Browns and Dolphins game. Both teams have not won yet. Neither one of them are scoring very much, but I'm taking the over at 41.5. Even though the Browns are bringing out a rookie quarterback, I think we're going to see some fireworks one way or the other, whether it's defensive touchdowns, special teams touchdowns, or just big plays down the field. Both teams trying to go out there and get that W. So I'm taking the over in the Browns-Dolphins of 41.5.
There it is. Keep your eye on Kenyon Drake this weekend in the backfield for Miami. Charlie, what do you have?
All right. I'm just looking here, and I see Cardinals at Bills. And maybe you say this is a sucker play, but I see Arizona -4. I think Arizona is one of the best teams in the league. I think the Bills are awful. I think the Cardinals, because defense travels, Doug.
Does ever
defense
that.
Travels to Buffalo in the cold weather, and it plays even though it's not cold. And the Cardinals will win big.
That could be one of those games where you go, "What in the hell happened?" Because the Bills beat the Cardinals. That stands out. I got to see where the public split is on that.
Sounds like you're not even considering Cookie Gilchrist into the equation.
I am considering Kent State and Alabama. Now, we know Alabama's going to win. I think they're laying 44 points. But I think this time, usually Nick Saban calls off the dogs more so than a lot of his cohorts in that class of programs. But I think this time Alabama has a damn good offense this year. And I'm not sure that their defense will not keep Kent State off the board. In other words, I think Kent State might get 7 points, and I think Alabama will score more than 44, and the over-under is 50, so I'm going to go with Alabama over 50. Alabama, Kent State, the over 50, Charlie.
How about this? I believe Nick Saban went to Kent State, so he's not going to want to
they play him every year,
show up his alma mater.
And it's usually around 49-0, but I think this year, I don't think they'll be able to help but score in the 50s. So fun facts for no one tell. There it is, the Wheelhouse Picks of the Week. Jared from Wheelhouse Downtown. Doug, if you're looking for a pony, it's the Wheelhouse. It really is. That's where the lovely ladies hang out.
Yeah.
That's where the lovely ladies roll. Jared, what do you got going on this weekend there?
Well, we're forecasting a pony show this weekend as usual. And we got the Cubs your card series on TV. Obviously, like to have everybody come down, check that out, get some nachos, grab yourself some big beers. And then we also got a St. Jude's run this weekend. We got quite a few employees participating, and we'll be doing that on Saturday morning, and then right after, hopefully getting a good crowd on Saturday to head to Wheelhouse for some bottomless mimosa. Where I'll probably be partaking and enjoying the festivities, and then big brunch again on Sunday, so it should be a pretty fun weekend as usual for us on the Wheelhouse.
I'm sure it will be. The Wheelhouse in downtown St. Louis. It's the Wheelhouse Picks of the Week. You can pick them on InsideSTL.com. Jared, we appreciate the time, sir.
Yes, absolutely. Appreciate it, fellas. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Jared.
From the Wheelhouse. Usually we do them on Friday, but since we have TMA live tonight, we did it right here with Jared from the Wheelhouse. Now, Larry Nickel was on hold. Seamaster, do you know what Larry Nickel wanted? Just was on hold. I'll text him and see if he wants to call back in. Plowhawk, do you know what Larry wanted? Or you guys been incommunicado, Doug? Is that what you say?
No. He Facebook messaged me yesterday, but I was at Billy G's, giving me his grandmother's address just in case I was ended up picking him up. Mm-hmm. And I told him I'd keep him posted. Maybe he was just getting an update on that.
Sorry I hung up on you guys, but I thought you were calling me to be on the air. Did we call him? No. It's telepathy, I guess, kicking in.
Yeah, I don't believe we've called him.
All right, Doug. Now, here's what I got
okay.
for you. Because this is going to lead into Brian Toohey, who's going to join us around 8:30. America's leading expert on game fixing and the author of The Fix is In, Larceny Games and A Season in the Abyss. He'll be our DraftKings guest of the day. Use promo code QUARTERBACK to play for free with your first deposit at DraftKings.com this weekend. This story, and this has significance. A very positive ruling for those of you who feel like there might have been something shifty going on with the Rams and the NFL and the relocation process. This ruling yesterday, the Rams must grant season tickets to some people who bought personal seat licenses while the NFL team was in St. Louis, and those PSLs are still valid despite the team's move to Los Angeles. This is according to a district court ruling issued Wednesday. The Rams must also refund deposits for others who bought PSLs through a district judge, though a district judge was unable to determine an amount for those deposits. This is in STLtoday.com. Three different parties have sued the Rams regarding the more than 46,000 people who bought PSLs before the team left for Los Angeles in January. Some plaintiffs paid as much as $1,000 for the licenses, which grant the right to buy season tickets. Two of those suing parties, Envision LLC and Richard Arnold, argue that their PSLs were still valid despite the Rams' relocation and that they had the right to buy season tickets in L.A. The Rams argue that the contracts were terminated by the move. The third suing party, Ronald McAllister, argued that the Rams, in effect, terminated their contracts with PSL holders when they relocated, and PSL holders therefore deserved refunds on their deposits based on the contract language. A spokesperson for the Rams could not be reached for comment.
Hard to believe.
Wednesday night. Yeah, I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I was too.
The ruling could be of great interest to St. Louis PSL owners who wish to sell their PSLs now that the Rams franchise is worth significantly more, and any potential PSLs for the new Rams stadium in L.A. could fetch much higher prices. District Judge Stephen Limbaugh Jr. based his ruling on the fact that two different kinds of PSL contracts were issued. Some were sold by the Rams ticketing agent Fans Inc. Remember Fans Inc. back in the mid-90s, Doug?
Yep.
And the others were sold directly by the Rams. Both the agreements say that in the events the Rams would play at another venue than St. Louis, the Rams must use its best efforts to provide seats for PSL holders. The judge ruled that the people who bought PSLs from fans cannot buy season tickets because the fans' contract clearly states that a Rams relocation would terminate the contract, thus rendering best efforts language moot. However, the Rams must use its best efforts to provide season tickets for people who bought PSLs directly from the team because that particular contract never states the PSL agreement is terminated by relocation. Even though both the fans and Rams contracts say a PSL holder cannot sue for damages over PSLs, the Rams failed to present that as an argument or even mention it in court, according to Wednesday's ruling. In the McAllister lawsuit, the judge pointed out that fans' contract says the Rams have the right to terminate the PSL contract for any reason and refund part or all of the PSL holder's deposit. However, deposit is not defined in the fans' contract. The judge promised to determine the amount of a deposit at a later date. The Rams now play in L.A., and they're expected to play at a new stadium in 2019. That is in STLtoday.com. Now, I spoke with a source on this because I am monitoring this very closely because it is my opinion, and it is not just based on my opinion and my hopes, that there is a lot that could go on here with the Rams and not only this suit but the class action suit brought against the Rams on January 12th. When they originally sold the PSLs, and that was the Fans Inc. one, that was agreement number one. That was 1995. Those were all the originals. Subsequently, they changed the agreement, and that was agreement number two. Now, here's what the judge has ruled to explain it in layperson terms. As to that initial agreement, the judge says the terms of that agreement, the Rams owe all the purchasers a refund because the Rams terminated that contract. That's a rule as a matter of law. Specifically, what that context says is the fans get a refund of the deposit. The plaintiffs argue that's the entire fee. The Rams argue that it's the deposit to hold your place in line, so the Rams contend they owe nothing. The judge didn't rule on that amount, as the STL Today story said. He says we will have to litigate that further. That will be determined. On the subsequent PSL agreement, you don't get a refund. But that's because these PSL owners who bought those PSLs directly from the Rams, the subsequent agreement, have a right to buy tickets in Los Angeles. On that contract, the plaintiffs didn't sue for that. His ruling says that's what the remedy is, but no one has sued for that yet. I want to emphasize yet. Technically, what the ruling means is that you're still entitled to your PSL in California. So how about that fun fact for no one? So how does this impact the class action suit? And some people might be going, what class action suit are you referring to? Because when these were announced in January, I think nationally and I also think locally, a number of people were going, oh, this is just people wanting attention or they're just pissed. So, you know, this is just, you know, a BS thing. And from the get-go, knowing, you know, the people involved and knowing that this isn't, there's zero attention whoring going on and also not by any means a need for money, that this was legitimate and that it had been ready to go from the moment that this became a possibility, and that's why it was filed the day after the Houston meetings, this class action suit is helped quite a bit by that. And the class action suit is this one, which is different than the one we just were discussing. It represents anyone who purchased a ticket to a Rams game or Rams merchandise from 2010 to 2015, alleging they were deceived into supporting the team in violation of Missouri state law. Missouri's Merchandising Practices Act bars acts of deception, fraud, false pretense, and misrepresentation in consumer transaction. The suit explains, pursuant to the MPA, Missouri Practices Act, any person who purchases merchandise for personal, family, or household purposes and suffers an ascertainable loss of money as a result of the use of unlawful acts in connection with such sale may bring a civil action to recover actual and punitive damages from the person who committed the unlawful act. In essence, if Stan Kroenke lied about his intentions and fans paid up as a result, Kroenke just may owe them not only a refund, but money to punish him for his wrongdoing. That is Missouri law. So, for those wanting the 30 for 30, which is what I'm yearning for, the deposition of Stan Kroenke and Kevin Nemhoff would be the centerpiece of that. And so for those of you wanting it, yesterday's ruling was a win because it gives an indication of where the law is siding on what has transpired. And that didn't even get into the basis for the class action suit, which is mainly because Stan Kroenke didn't say much, although he did say a couple of things in 2010, and that's why the date is 2010. But Nemhoff and all the things he was saying. And some of it's used on our show. Some of it's used on the show I did with Jim Edmonds. And some of it's on with Randy Carricker and DeMarco Farr on 101 ESPN. He did it to himself. His words. Just play the tapes. So, big picture, it's great for a lot of reasons, I'm told. The class action suit is not based on the contract. The plaintiffs have been partially vindicated and will hopefully be further vindicated when they determine what the refund will be. As for the state of that class action suit, on this side, they want it tried in Missouri state court. The Rams want federal court. And so that is what they're waiting for, is to find out where that would be. But the Missouri law is tighter for the plaintiff side, and that is why they would want that in Missouri. The Rams, knowing that, want that to be moved to a federal court. There is the latest.
So for the lawsuit on the Merchandising Act, anybody who bought a jersey, a hat, a ticket, how will you have to prove that, I wonder?
Well, you can have credit card receipts. If you bought cash, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess that would probably be the only way to do it. I
imagine the majority would be in credit card transactions, but there's also the punitive damages.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, the Rams are taking this seriously. And I know it became like hot take topic when they heard that, oh, this is just St. Louis fans being bitter. This is just an attorney looking for attention. I'm just telling you. Well, I mean, fans being bitter, I would understand that, and I would include myself in that camp.
We should be bitter.
But as far as the attorney, this isn't like, I'm fresh out of law school and I'm going to attention whore. That's not what's going on here. So I'm telling you this as somebody who is directly, I don't want to say directly associated with that would be right, but certainly in contact with what's going on with this class action suit. And I know the Rams are taking this seriously. So that can give you some satisfaction if you're looking for some schadenfreude, much less when you watch them dick around with their offense every Sunday.
Right. And with punitive damages, you never know what that amount could be. That could be astronomical.
And the one thing is, and I'm telling you this is the thing, and this is, I'm sure Kroenke's more concerned about the money, but Kevin Nemhoff doesn't want to be deposed. They don't want to be deposed. I don't know how he would explain what he did. And I'm not talking about being the fall guy and, okay, I'm getting paid to do this. It was the mistake of saying things. I get why Kroenke didn't talk. I thought that the entire time while it was going on. If you don't want to be here, I mean, I remember Strauss saying that all the time. He goes, yeah, you don't hear from him because they don't want to be here. So why would he say anything? And that's what I would say to Demoff. If you guys would just say something. And he goes, well, we've just chosen to handle it this way. Okay, but then you said on a show I was hosting, there have been no secret plans with Los Angeles. Okay, at the time, it held weight. But then after you get to move to L.A., you do an interview in which you talk about Stanley Steemer driving around Inglewood at 5 in the morning in 2013 looking at a site he loves. The problem for you is the interview was conducted in October 14. So how do you explain that while you try to sell tickets? How do you explain that? Well, it was deceptive, and that's the basis. But that's not the only piece. So that is the latest on that. And you can take it or leave it and say I'm making things up. I don't, whatever. Do with it what you want. This comes from a very good source. So there's that. And one of the reasons why we bring it up leading into our interview with Brian Toohey, America's leading expert on game fixing, the author of The Fix Is In, is because I was theorizing going into last week's game against the Seahawks is that it wouldn't surprise me if somehow, magically, with some odd calls, the Rams would be able to cover or win against the Seahawks to help get them over in week one of their return to Los Angeles for their first home game. And joining us right now to give us his thoughts is Brian Toohey. Brian, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
It is great to have you on the show, and I'm looking forward to getting your perspective on this. I don't know if you were able to hear what we were talking about going into putting you on the air, but you know, I've theorized for a while now that some things are shifty, specifically in NFL games, because from watching sports wagering for a couple of decades, it strikes me that when there is a game, and there's one every 2 or 3 weeks, it seems to me, last week I would have said Packers-Vikings would have been the example, where the public is all on one team, and just, it's got to be 75 to 80% of the time, the underdog covers, and people lose thousands and thousands of dollars, if not more. What do you think about that that theory I have?
Well, I think you're a very wise man. That's a very general observation that a lot of gamblers have in terms of betting on sports, that a lot of times if you just simply bet against which way the public is leaning, you wind up doing much better. You don't have to research any stats, statistics, you know, weather, anything like that. You just bet against the public and you do well. Because, I mean, I don't necessarily think the NFL and Las Vegas are really tied together, but I think the way Las Vegas sets their odds and sets the point spreads is they do it on public perception, and they realize where the public favor lies, and they set their lines accordingly, and that's why the public usually winds up being more wrong than right.
If you were going to somehow fix or alter the outcome of a game, there'd have to be a lot of people involved in that, though, wouldn't there?
No, not at all. I mean, if you wanted to shave points in a basketball game, you have one player, you own 20% of the team.
Basketball, I could see. Football seems like there's a lot of people, and on baseball, too.
Well, baseball, I think, would be the most difficult. But if you look outside this country, you look at, like, soccer. Soccer is the most corrupt sport in the world, yet it's the most popular sport in the world. And they have 22 players out there, the same as the NFL does. And they can fix soccer games and have fixed soccer games so well, they can say, I want this game to end 2-0, and the game will end 2-0. So they can do it. I mean, I talked to one gambler who said, if you, in the NFL, you give me a quarterback, an offensive lineman, and a defensive back, I can give you any game any day of the week.
Wow.
Three players, and I can do it. And I think, honestly, if you have a referee, an official, you can easily alter the outcome of a game. Now, it may be more difficult the fewer people you have, but I think, you know, people don't understand that, you know, I think, what was it, the Detroit Lions game this past weekend, they had three touchdowns called back. And yet everybody celebrated Marcus Mariota and the big comeback. But you know what? If they had those three touchdowns that weren't called back, they won the game. The officials perhaps took that game away from them.
Brian, I could totally see how with officials, and I know a lot of officials even now in the United States and I'm sure internationally make a lot of money. But if they weren't making as much, how it would benefit them to do something like that. I'm wondering with the players, though, nowadays, all these players make so much money, multi-million dollars, and quarterbacks are making, you know, $15, $18, $20 million. Would it really make sense for any of these players to get involved with that because they're making so much money from their teams?
Well, that is true. But at the same time, you know, these players are people, too. They have their own problems. You know, they may have a drug problem. They may be on performance-enhancing drugs. They may have a gambling problem of their own. They may have women problem. They may have men problem. Everybody, unfortunately, no matter who you are in this world, has a weakness, has a soft spot, has something that could be exploited. And organized crime, I think, has shown throughout its history, they know how to find those weaknesses and exploit them for their own personal gain. And that's what I'm talking about. I mean, you've seen guys like Allen Iverson make $100 million throughout the course of their career and wind up bankrupt as soon as they leave the league. Warren Sapp did the same thing. Mark Brunell lost 50-some-odd million dollars. I mean, these guys, despite the fact that they seem like they're making a lot of money, as you know, Patrick Ewing famously said, they also spend a lot of money, too. So they have found, especially, again, if you look at soccer, where we know match-fixing is a proven thing, that sometimes older players, veteran players, who have burned through all this money they've made over the course of their careers, have been reached a point where they'll be willing to accept a bribe to throw a game because they want the money. And the very real fact is a wise player doesn't even need to be bribed to fix the game. They could just fix it on their own. They don't have to tell anybody. They just have to have an accomplice who will go bet it for them, and they could do it on their own. They don't even need that bribery aspect to it. They could just decide to be greedy and do these things because they want to.
Brian Toohey is our guest right now. He's written a number of books. The Fix is In, Larceny of Games and A Season in the Abyss, and you can read more at thefixisin.net. Now, Brian, with all of this established as our premise and potentially our theory, let me ask you this question. Why do you think the major four leagues in the United States are against North America, I should say, against legalized and regulated sports gambling?
Well, they claim that it's because if it was legalized, it would affect their integrity, which I don't believe, because they're well-versed in the fact that the reason people are tuning in, especially the NFL and the NBA, I think, is because they have a financial interest in the outcome, whether it's a regular bet with a bookie or whether it's, you know, daily fantasy sports or their own fantasy sports league. People are watching more because they have a vested financial interest in the outcome of these games. But I think the real reason the leagues are against this is because they're afraid of the oversight. Because if you look again, I hate to keep bringing up soccer, but because it's a proven thing, you know, in soccer in Europe, it's legal to bet over there. The betting companies monitor the wagering. And when they see something strange happen, some sort of odds fluctuation in the bets or the odds and that sort of thing, they'll flag it, they'll investigate it. If it turns out to be really strange, they'll turn it over to the authorities. And the authorities in Europe have made numerous arrests and even gotten convictions on game fixing and illegal betting scams because of the legalized sports gambling there. Well, we don't have that here. 98% of the sports gambling done, which could be as much as $500 billion here in the United States, is unregulated and unmonitored. But if you put a couple corporations and businesses in charge of all that who are watching it and then added state regulations like they do with horse racing and dog racing on top of it, then the league might have to answer some questions and actually do some investigations into some of the strange things we've seen go on in these games.
Do you think college athletes are more susceptible to it than the pros because they don't
totally
get paid? Yeah.
Like you said, like I think you're about to say, because they don't get paid.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're a college athlete and it's like a football player and, you know, you're not going to be NFL bound, but you're still pretty good. You're a starter and you walk out in that field and, you know, your coach is the highest paid state employee. He's making $3, $4, $5 million a year. Got 100,000 people in the stands. Some of them are wearing your jerseys. This is being broadcast to millions of people around the country, and you're not making a dime on this. I think any player who would be approached and some gambler, organized crime guy comes up to him, a booster even, and say, look, I'll give you 10 grand. You make sure, you know, you can win the game. Just don't win it by more than the point spread, and I'll give you even more money on the back end of that deal. What player would turn that down? I mean, I think you'd have to have a whole lot of personal integrity to, you know, not accept such an approach, but I think those approaches are made a lot because the NCAA has even done anonymous surveys of, like, I think it was like 20,000 student-athletes the last time they did it, which was a couple of years ago, and asked them, have you been approached to fix games? Have you been involved in fixing games? Have you bet on your own sport? And a percentage, not a huge percentage, but like 1% to 2% of athletes have admitted to being approached to fix games and actually being involved in fixed games. Yet, where are all the scandals? Where are all the investigative reports? You know, it's a subject that's completely ignored in this country because I don't think the sports media wants to get involved with it because they're funding these sports.
Brian, when's the last time in North American sports, whether it be professional or college, where you did notice something, whether based on just watching the game and saying, you know, that looks fishy, or betting patterns where you thought something could be up?
Every week, unfortunately. I think if you know, I look at game fixing from two angles. One is from that organized crime and gambling angle, and the other angle is the leagues manipulating their own games for entertainment purposes. And what I try to convince people and tell people is, look, there is no law that prevents, like, the NFL from fixing its own game. It could do so perfectly legally because the NFL is entertainment, unfortunately. Fans don't want to believe that sports are entertainment, but they are entertainment. The NFL would admit it's show business, and because of that, there's no law that prevents them from manipulating their own game, the same as there's no law from manipulating, like, a reality television show to make it more interesting. So, I mean, I think you look at certain games just like last week. I don't think that Packers-Vikings game was completely legit. I think they let the Vikings win that game because of the home opener, the new stadium, and all the controversy that went around surrounding building that stadium. I think, you know, winning's good medicine, made a lot of Vikings fans happy, a lot of people in Minnesota happy, and that would be good business for the league. And that's, we have to remember, it's a business, and fixing certain games would be very good business decisions.
And would that explain why? I mean, I looked at that line last week, Brian.
Yeah, it was like 2.5, right?
But here's the thing, man. It was 2.5, and by kickoff, it dropped to 1. And I'm going, this is just, I mean, there's plenty of sites, I'm sure you're familiar with them, where you can look up and find out where the Las Vegas money is and the breakdown between what's considered public money and what's considered sharp money, i.e. professional gamblers. And I didn't even have to look. I know that where the public was on that one. Everybody was betting the Packers, but everybody's betting the Packers, yet the line's going down. I'm going, God, this is... I didn't even need to watch the game. If anything, I kicked myself for not betting the Vikings, and the same thing with the Rams. The Rams would fall under that same umbrella that you're talking about. Good for business to make sure. And then what happens? There were 16 offensive pass interference calls last weekend for the entire league, 32 teams. Three of them were on the Seattle Seahawks. And then you had the face mask penalty right at the end on Case Keenum, which would have given him the ball back to the Seahawks. But the offensive pass interference calls in particular, Pete Carroll, who isn't exactly all that whatever with referees, I've never seen him react like that to the third one. And then you just go, God, I mean, it happens every damn year where there are these games that you go, there's no way. And then sure enough, I don't even think about it. I'm like, I don't know how, but the Vikings are going to win that football game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the reality is, look, if the NFL, which is what Tim Donaghy, the ex-NBA referee, alleged happened in the NBA, but it'd be the same for the NFL. If the league basically didn't have to outright tell the referees, but just implied to the referees, this is what we want to have happen, it's an employer telling an employee how to do their job. So there's no bribery involved. It's just, look, this is what we want you to do. And when you get subjective penalties like pass interference, holding, those sorts of things, you know, a certain penalty can really alter the outcome of the game very easily. So all the referee has to do is make a call here, make a call there, and they can easily sway a game, or at least push a game to be closer than it perhaps should be into the fourth quarter. And how many games have we seen already this year that have ended, you know, in the final 2 minutes or have been just a one-score game to keep people watching to the very end? I mean, it's a very easy thing to do. And again, it's perfectly legal for a league to do that. And that, to me, is the scary part, is fans don't seem to recognize that if the league wants to do this, and again, good business would say sometimes you do have to make sure certain storylines and certain players succeed. What's stopping them? Just their own quote-unquote integrity. And you know, I'm sure right now in St. Louis, a lot of people don't think the NFL has a lot of integrity, do they?
No, we know that. Seems like boxing would be easy to fix, too. What are your thoughts on boxing?
Oh, boxing is incredibly corrupt.
Yeah.
And I think, too, and I can't prove it, but I think the UFC kind of falls along those same lines. I mean, people forget, I think, the very real history of fixing and boxing. And, I mean, back in the 50s, one organized crime member, this guy by the name of Frankie Carbo, literally ran organized boxing. I mean, he controlled the heavyweight, middleweight, lightweight, welterweight divisions, and he ran boxing for more than a decade. And by running it, I mean, he would organize the fights, determine where they were being fought, because he worked with two of the founding members of the NHL, Arthur Wirtz, whose family still owns the Blackhawks to this day, and James Norris, whose family owned the Red Wings, and the Norris Trophy is named after. Those two guys owned the major arenas around the country, so Carbo worked with those two guys to set up fights in their arenas, and Carbo, like you said, would control who would fight who, and oftentimes who would win to set up other fights. And it happened for more than a decade. And once he left the business, then he had guys like shady guys like Don King step into his void, and I think the same thing just continued to go on to this day.
And how widespread again in the NFL? You think every week we're watching a game or two or more that might be a little shady?
Well, you know, the thing is, I could be wrong with 99% of the games I think were rigged. But if I'm right just once, then you have to question the entire integrity of the league. You know, if the league just fixed one game because they wanted, you know, a certain team to win on a certain week, even if it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it still means their integrity is completely shot. So I think, you know, if fans just watch games with a critical eye like you've been doing and you see calls, I mean, you know, on your HD screen, you can see whether a guy's inbounds or out of bounds, and yet the referee will come out after reviewing the play and tell you he's out of bounds when he clearly saw he was inbounds. I think that leads you to some conclusions that, look, this is, something's going on here. You know, this may not be legit, and then I think you just, if you connect the dots and see why certain teams are succeeding at certain points in time, then I think, you know, you come to the conclusion I have that not everything's on the line. I don't think it is the professional wrestling where every game is fixed, but I think, again, when they see certain profit in certain teams succeeding, then they'll push that along.
Or profit in teams failing. I recall watching Rams games over the last couple of years and going, what in the world was that? And it would be a call against the Rams. Mm-hmm. Although Jeff Fisher has a track record of enjoying having the highest penalized team in the NFL. Where do you think the most corruption takes place? Officials? Players? Some other source?
I think, you know, it's across the line. I mean, again, if you look in sports where we know it's occurred, if you look at boxing, they've gotten to fighters, they've gotten to judges, they've gotten to referees. You look at soccer. I mean, some soccer leagues, like Serie A soccer in Italy, is literally corrupt from top to bottom, from the players all the way to the team owners. And if you look at cricket, like the Indian Premier League, which is their national sport, the Indian Premier League in cricket is completely corrupt the same way, from the players all the way up to the owners. I mean, it can happen at all levels of the sport. And if, you know, people don't think it can happen in the NBA, then someone explain game tanking to me in the NBA. You know,
right?
I mean, why players are
the Philadelphia 76ers model?
Yeah, and I mean that's coming from the top. That's coming from ownership, or at least the general manager saying to the players, either these games don't matter, or make sure you lose because we want higher draft picks. Those are fixed games. You know, Kobe Bryant's last game, I think, was a complete sham.
Yeah,
and that's a legitimate NBA game, but people aren't going to call that a sham. They're just going to say it wasn't that great. Kobe went out on top.
Brian Toohey's his name. He is our guest, and he is the author of The Fix Is In, Larceny Games and a Season in the Abyss. You can read more at thefixisin.net. Brian Toohey, our guest here on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Brian, we really appreciate the time, sir. Fascinating stuff. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, too, guys.
There he is, Brian Toohey. Thanks. Us. The Seamaster heard him on Dan Patrick, I guess, last week, I think. That's why. Am I correct on this, Iggy? I don't know, because if it was your guest, then I don't want to... No, I want to respect the Plow Iggy monster.
That was a sea monster.
But you know what, Doug? Like the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and some people say Holy Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's all one.
Right. Well, I think the headline that came out of that, the big thing that I got was he said every match in pro wrestling is fixed.
Whoa.
That's what he said right there towards the end.
Whoa, every one of them. Well, I guess that explains why Larry had called in.
Probably so, to bicker with him.
I agree with what he said absolutely at the end about teams tanking. Look at the 76ers in basketball. Look at the Cubs and the Astros before they got good. They didn't want to win. And I've said this for years with the Rams. I'm not saying that the players on the field weren't trying to win. They absolutely were. But from an organizational standpoint, were the Rams really trying to win the last 4 or 5 years in St. Louis with Fisher and Snead? What, 3 years in a row they had the youngest team in the league? I don't think that was by design. And I don't think this past year you draft a young offensive line and you draft Todd Gurley, even though that was a great pick in hindsight, you didn't think you were going to get that much out of him in 2015.
Right.
So
absolutely, certainly
from an organizational standpoint, the Rams were not trying to win, and it absolutely benefited them in trying to move to lose. So again, I'm not saying that the guys in the field were throwing games. That's not what I'm saying. But organizationally, they were not trying
to
succeed.
How often would you have a coach and a GM who've put up the numbers that Fisher and Snead had put up draft a guy who is not expected to play until X amount of weeks into the season when they're fighting for their lives? At least you would think any of the other 31 organizations. And that was said by a number of people in April of 2000, or May, whenever the hell it was, of 2015. What an odd pick.
So, keep
in mind, as I said also on the show, that we had a listener contact me, and then I went back and forth with him about, I could probably pull it up in my messages here, about how his wife worked with Les Snead's wife, and she came in one day and said, I'm going to quit. And this was before the vote. This was in 2015. They said, oh, really? What happened? She goes, well, we're moving to Los Angeles, so I know, you know, I won't be doing this anymore.
Mm-hmm. It seems like there ought to be a St. Louis lawsuit based on that, too, that that was fixed and that we spent, what, $16 million to try to come up with a plan.
Well, I contacted Dave Peacock. He did respond. I don't know if I said this on the air. I know I talked about it on the fan page. He has never been on this show, you know, for whatever reason. I don't know. It's not like there's any ill will, at least as far as I know. I know there's none on our end. I just want him to tell his side of the story. He said, thanks, Tim. I'll hold off for now. Nothing exciting to discuss. I assume you were texting about NFL now that the season has started. I said, yes, sir. We were never able to have you on the show while the process was going on. I know I would enjoy, and I think our audience would enjoy hearing your perspective on what transpired. Now, there was a Sports Illustrated article this week. I don't know if you guys saw, did you see that SI.com? Like what it was like in St. Louis as the Rams had their first home game, and Peacock was quoted in that article. Very brief quote. The article certainly wasn't geared around Dave Peacock, but he, you know, they asked a bunch of people who used to work for the Rams, fans in St. Louis, bar owners in St. Louis, Brian McAfee, a guy who advertises with us. He owns Over Under Bar, great black and chicken sandwich, by the way. And they asked Peacock about it, and I'm trying to pull the article up so I can give the exact quote, but since that's taking... Okay, here it is. Rams leave St. Louis, checking in with the fans left behind. You can read it at SI.com. And it's a long story. They talk about some of the former employees who decided to stay here, severance packages, and then also spoke with Peacock. And it's not like he gave an extensive interview. Talked with Andy McCollum, the former Ram, donut brother, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
But regarding Peacock, they say, for Peacock, the man who headed St. Louis' stadium task force, losing the Rams obviously stings. But after a year plus of hard work and public scrutiny to no avail, he's even more frustrated by the $17 million that went toward pitching a new St. Louis stadium to a league that, in retrospect, hardly seemed interested in the possibility. Quote, they asked us to take the design farther than we had planned. We did that. We delivered construction documents effectively. His advice for other cities going through the process in the future, quote, I would make sure to have very clear up front in writing exactly what they are going to be asked for and what's expected. People will learn from our experience. When you spend $17 million over delivering relative to what was asked by the league and coming up with a $450 million plan and still get told no, you've got to be eyes wide open going in. Not seeing any remuneration for any investment in the public made in what I think was a very legitimate offer. That's the only thing that leaves me with a bad taste. Those millions of dollars are very important and could have done a lot of good in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another thing.
Peacock, SI.com this week.
You know, Dave Peacock, a brilliant businessman, multimillionaire, you know, head of a huge corporation. The thing that always bothered me at the end of this was, remember that magical $100 million? That all of a sudden wasn't placed in the right spot, or you know the Rams people, Peacock, or the St. Louis people thought they were getting an extra $100 million. The Rams and the NFL said no. Are we supposed to pretend and think that like Dave Peacock just made that up?
Right.
Come on, like do you think Dave Peacock and his people and his lawyers didn't look over the term sheet and know exactly how much money they were going to get or they were told they were going to get from somebody in the NFL?
And
then all of a sudden there's an extra $100 million that's laying around that they're not going to get? That's crazy.
And if you remember, again, I know I'm going back 9 months and some people may not remember it, but there was a letter Roger Goodell sent, except he, of course, made it public, that was dressing down Peacock, insinuating that this plan was trying to get the alderman, this was before the alderman vote, Board of Alderman vote, to side with him when in reality they don't have the money in place. And at the time I'm thinking, wow, okay, this lends itself to what I had been told, that some of this may be about some politicians trying to save face, that they were going to be in office while an NFL team moved out of the state and city. And I'm thinking, okay, well then this might have been smoke and mirrors on the part of St. Louis. And I still don't know one way or the other, but that's the perspective I gave a lot of credence to. Of course, a month later, and now more and more information coming out and more information being discussed, I go, okay, well, then that was the NFL. And what about the Bernie Miklas thing? I mean, now what Bernie said, and Bernie and I, we've exchanged texts that day and the next day about how an NFL rep called him or texted him to line Grubman up on the show. That guy was, jeez, to say that the St. Louis effort is not going to meet the NFL's expectations. And that was in mid-December, if I'm not mistaken. The vote was in early January.
Mm-hmm.
And so they sought out Bernie to have Grubman come on his show. It's not like Grubman was lining up everywhere to do interviews. We did have him on one time, and if you remember, the thing you always say, Doug, remember, we said, well, even if they come up with a stadium plan, it's up to the owner to decide if the stadium plan is
He gave a list of three things that had to be met, and one of them was, if the owner doesn't like the stadium, he doesn't have to stay. So you could have built a $5 billion stadium, and if he says, I don't like it, then he can leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of trumped everything else.
So, like I said, it takes what's going on. And again, I recognize, and you know, people, when I was talking about the lawsuit, the article in the Post-Dispatch regarding Judge Limbaugh's decision and the information I have on the class action suit, and they go, you guys are dreaming, you know, or they'll get angry and say, Tim, you're an idiot. You can't believe you're falling for this. Well, that's fine. You're welcome to whatever opinion, and it may not happen. It's not like I'm saying this is going to happen. So let me make that clear. However, I am telling you that the kind of like the climate had to be absolutely perfect for the 590 the man, 1380 the woman thing to happen. Like it, I mean,
stars aligned.
The stars.
You're not going to compare this to that, are you?
I'm saying that was so comically stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, how in the hell did anybody ever get involved in that? Well, there were so many circumstances that allowed for that to happen, and you had to have the right people with the right traits or lack of to have that go forward. In this scenario, you had to have the absolute right situation for the NFL to pull what they may have pulled, but as far as the litigation on it, you have the right people involved. You don't have people who need to do this. They're not doing this for their career, and they're just principled as all hell and on a mission. And the mission is the deposition, which is always why I hashtag destination deposition, because I'm telling you, that's coming down the railroad tracks. And once that happens, then maybe, there will be attention given to this. But until then, it's like, yeah, well, the Rams were in L.A. and they just came back home. And St. Louis is a crappy city that's dying, so, and they're a baseball town. So then it just fits the narrative, and we conveniently go on and enjoy and play, you know, fantasy football and bet on games. And I don't blame anybody around the country for caring about it, but this is my hometown, and I believe my hometown was wronged, and that's why I'm pissed about it. That's why I talk about it. We got a break. It's Ryan Kelly Morning After.